Now stay tuned for To Your Health, where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining in the downtown mall. And by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Now here is your host, MC Blair.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning to you. Good Saturday morning. Fans of To Your Health, fans, healthy fans, hopefully healthy fans, and fans that aren't so healthy that would like to learn how to get that way. You know, I was talking to my friend John Whiteside of Wolf Creek Farm earlier this morning. He's my beef guy. He's been on the show a couple of times. We'll probably have him back. He raises beef the right way, grass-fed, grass-finished. He actually plants cowpeas in the fields. And that's to satisfy the legume requirement for cows. They do need legumes. Clover, by the way, is in the legume family. And so anyway, I was talking to John, and he was saying that, you know, it's too bad that we got away from our agrarian society. And, of course, that was when, you know, most people were actually farmers. Everybody had a family garden. And you know, we've talked about this before, the meals all shared as a family, and just, you know, it was all about family. And so people talk about vacation. Well, they never took a vacation. They didn't need to. You know, they would go down the street and socialize at the town hall or at somebody else's farm. And that was their social life, and that was their life. The farm was their work, was their life in a good way. Families, more families stuck together, and, you know, they were definitely healthier. So we got away from that. And, you know, a large portion of our economy is agricultural exports. And so we need a large amount of agriculture, a ton of produce and animal agriculture, you know, products, in order to fulfill our export requirement. And because of that, we don't have enough to do those exports and feed ourselves. We could feed ourselves. We could completely feed ourselves on the small farm model, and that would be every city, every single person could be fed on real food, pastured pork and poultry and grass-fed beef, as well as the non GMO and, you know, non-chemically fertilized and pesticided, produce. And so, you know, we could do that. We really could. And, of course, we would be way more healthy, and we would use far less pharmaceuticals. So I guess there's a couple of industries that would be put out and would not be as lucrative, which, in my opinion, is a good thing. And anyway, John told me about a doctor at the Cleveland Clinic who took a gal, one of his subjects, was morbidly obese, had diabetes, kidney problems, liver problems, all the things that go along with extreme obesity. And within 3 days, her attitude changed. She felt better. And this was a diet, he calls it a pagan diet, which is a pagan diet. Anyway, it's the cross between paleo and vegan, which is basically plant-based with a little bit of pastured pork and poultry and grass-fed beef mixed in a little bit. When I say a little bit, I'm talking 4 to 6 ounces of meat and 8 to 9 to 10 cups of plant material. That is a plant-based diet, the one that actually works, because you do need that animal protein. We do need the animal protein in our diets for optimum health. I do know some vegans that are healthy, that have beat cancer and all that sort of thing. They have to go to great lengths in order to substitute that protein, and their body still could use that protein, no doubt. And so anyway, so she felt within 3 days, In the first year, she lost about 60 pounds, and the next year, she lost over 100 pounds. And today, she is a brand new person, a completely different person with different outlooks on life. Most of her fear is gone, and so her anger levels have decreased to next to nothing because, you know, that's where anger comes from fear. So see, you're going to get a psychological evaluation right here on our show. We talk about total health on To Your Health, and it really boils down to eating as locally as you can. If you can get a home garden, that is stress reducing. Trust me on that. You can just hang out in the garden and your stress levels go down. You know, those we rely on our plants for calmness, if you will. And of course, there's all sorts of calming properties of plants. So check it out, folks. Yes, sir. You know, all this. Here's a beautiful example. There's a farm that I know that does good practices, and they the husband and wife have, you know, they're no longer, you know, together, and they go on vacations every year to a nice place. And John Whiteside was telling me that when you do that, back in the old days, the agrarian society, nobody went on vacation. You just, like I said earlier, your life is your farm, is your work. It's not like work, although sometimes it is, but everybody's doing it. And so, you know, you're together as an entire community. But when you go on vacations to exotic places, and then you go back and all of a sudden you have to, of course, it's always in the winter because that's when, you know, that's when the farm slows down. So you go to a nice warm place, a beach or, you know, even a nice place that is not the farm, and you stay in a hotel and, you know, you have all these amenities that you don't have on the farm. And then you have to go back to the farm and break the ice on the watering trough for the cows and then you have a heifer that has a breech birth. So you have to go in there and, you know, stick your hands here and there and, you know, get down and dirty, walk through the mud to get to the hogs or whatever. And your mind is going, man, I left, we'll call it a tropical paradise for this. So you're kind of going back and forth, and eventually that'll wear on you. And so that can cause all sorts of challenges mentally for you. And there's time the farm doesn't look so good anymore. But anyway, so, you know, last week I played a interview with Gail Hobbs Page of Caramont Farm. And I didn't have time to do the entire interview, but we're going to do it today. It's really good. Learn a lot from her. She and her husband, Daniel, he is partners with Bill Hamilton down at Hamilton's First in Maine, which is one of our sponsors. And she is a cheesemaker. She was an executive chef. She's been a chef for years and years and years and years and years. That's when I knew her, down in Norfolk, Virginia. And so, you know, she knows her way around a kitchen, let me tell you, all right? And she does dinners and she does classes down at Caramont Farm. Check it out on the website and all sorts of things. But she is a, in this area, she's a champion of real food, a champion of, you know, getting with the family and of the community and helping out, just kind of a throwback to those original agrarian society places that we had here in America. And, you know, trust me, you get out in the rural area, right in our counties, our various counties, and it takes you back. And there's, you know, there's a lot of farms out there. There's a lot of folks that are that are doing this. And so, you know, in her community alone, there's all sorts of people in different income stratas. And so she's told me that, and I'll let her tell you in the interview, but they're getting together more and more with the whole community. You know, all the folks down the road, this, and they're helping out with this. And, you know, we trade different foods back and forth. And it was really heartening to be around that and to be around somebody who really believes in the family farm. And, you know, and also we tackled some other challenges for the area. I'll tell you what, UVA could really help out. And as well as the Food Justice Network, there are several, organizations within that umbrella of the Food Justice Network that give grants. And so there's a concerted effort, or could be a concerted effort, with local activists and farmers and citizenry and city councils and county planning commissions and all that. If that were to happen, even the people with, in the lower income strata could actually afford real food. And right now, it's out of sight. It's expensive. Very expensive. I mean, you know, we're talking, you know, $25, $30, $40 chickens. That's expensive. $4 a pound, $4.50 a pound, $5 a pound. Well, that could be afforded if the entire community bought in. Then there would be a sliding scale. And each person would have, a card or however you'd work that out. And so you'd buy it directly from the farmer. Or there could be an organization that was for the individual person. There is one right now it just completely eluded me. I cannot believe I forgot. They deal with the institutions, the restaurants, the schools, all that sort of thing. And what they do is they go around to the local farms and they have arrangements with them and they buy the food. So you get this local food hub. I don't know why that went away. But they do that. They work with all the farmers and then the various restaurants and schools and institutions that want to have local food. They can go to the local food hub and get it at a reduced price, a wholesale price, if you will. And so they're doing that for the institutions. Well, if we could get a similar organization together for the people, individuals, then I think that would go a long way into improving the health, not only the mental, but the physical health, less co-pays, and all that sort of thing. So without further ado, I am going to play this interview. We'll have a break about 20 after. This is To Your Health on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm MC Blair, and we are going to now hear from Gail Hobbs Page of Caramont Farm. MC Blair here. I am at Caramont Farm, and we're going to be interviewing Gail Hobbs Page shortly. I'm waiting now. She's in the middle of feeding animals. I'm on a wraparound deck looking out over the farm. Absolutely gorgeous. If you ever get a chance to get out of town and get to a farm, do so. It's wonderful, calming, stress-free environment. I guess the farmers go through a little stress, but I don't. It's not my farm. Well, here comes Gail now. Hey, Gail, how are you?
I'm doing great. This is a fine day here in Virginia.
It is. Speaking with Gail Hobbs Page of Caramont Farm. And we are sitting on this beautiful deck. Sun, gorgeous, not a cloud in the sky. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful day. And a stress-free environment.
Well, this time of year, it's pretty stressless for me, too.
Yeah.
The season is coming to an end with long nights and short days just down the corner, around the corner. This is a good time of year for us.
And it's the only time I could get out here for the interview, because other than that, if I wanted to interview her during the heavy season, I'd be following her around while she did chore. Yeah, like, no doubt.
Yes, yes.
So what do you do here at Caramont?
Well, we've been making fine farmstead cheeses, I'm happy to say, since 2007. Mm-hmm. Started out with a herd of only about 13 goats, and now we're up to about 125. And we're just here in Southern Albemarle County producing cheeses for our community, and have been doing that for a very long time. Yeah, that's what we do. We just lead a very seasonal life, and been doing that since 2007.
So it's going well for you.
Well, it's not without its challenges.
Yeah, I understand.
Climate change comes to mind. Seasonality comes to mind. But we have been able to make a go of this by never taking ourselves real seriously. And also letting the animals really drive the kinds of cheeses we make, and also realizing that our farm is something special, and that we open up our farm and share it with others, because the best way to see what we do is to come here and see us do it. And so we have developed a very healthy, popular agritourism program that we're proud to say is in its fifth year.
Agritourism, so that means you have people visiting and...
Not a new concept.
Mm-hmm.
People come to the farm. People enjoy the farm. People see what we do. They leave their cell phones home, hopefully, and they just come and relax and be in a rural environment that encourages mindfulness and good food, and it's really just a nice way to spend the day.
Hmm. Oh my gosh! Now you do dinners, don't you?
Well, we do a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
We realized probably 5 years ago that just making cheese really wasn't sustainable for the amount of employees that we wanted to have here. And so with my food background, sort of gives me a little bit of a boost in that realm. So we started doing dinners. Quite frankly, they now have shifted over more to events that happen during the day. Although with that said, we do have some plans this spring for a series of pop-ups with local chefs that come to the farm and do their thing. But yeah, we started doing farm dinners, which were very popular. Now we do more food festival types. When we were in Europe last year, we went to a bean festival, a truffle festival, a fried fish festival.
Mm.
And I said to my husband, I was like, we should kind of do that here. Also, it's very dark here. And we don't have streetlights, and we don't have sidewalks.
Right.
And so getting people home safely was very important to us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's the structure of the things we do now, is we mostly open up the farm and we have people come out and make good food for everyone here.
Well, that's great. I first met Gail. She was chefing at a friend's restaurant down in Norfolk, Virginia. And then they moved up here. She and her husband, Daniel, moved up here and actually took up residence at Hamilton's at first in Maine to start with.
For over 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. And then you got the farm and started making cheese.
Well, I cooked at Hamilton's for 7 years and then went out to Nelson County, found a wonderful restaurant community out there where I attempted to do, actually had a garden, think of it, and we ate. We cooked dishes from the garden.
That was at the B&B, right?
Yeah, the Marquette. It was a fantastic food experience for me. That was when I was kind of transitioning over to the idea that I wanted a life on the farm. And I still wanted a life in food. Laura Mendoza of Lampo fame was, in Prime 109 fame, was my first sous chef. And I think he was a teenager.
Yes, he was. I remember
but
that.
But the boy could cook even when he was a teenager.
And I was sharing a house with he and his dad.
For local chefs
yeah.
in the community. So, yeah, this story has, you know, been around for a long time, but I cooked out there and then got an opportunity to do a dairy project at Best of What's Around, which is Maple Hill Farm. And that was very a brief stint. And then the dairy thing, the cheese-making thing really got into my bones, and I just decided I really wanted to do it. So that was when we moved the project here. That was in 2006.
Right.
2007 was my first permitted year of selling, and I was the new gal on the block. And there was Pat Elliott over in Rappahannock.
Yes, yeah.
Verona, who really forged a lot of territory.
She did.
Grayson, oh, who makes the Grayson? Oh, Meadow Creek Dairy up in Galax.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, there were very few cheesemakers in the South. But now I'm happy to say that, you know, we have a pretty good thing. We've got, you know, got at least three projects going on here, and the cheeses are all wonderful. And some of them came through here, and I think since that time, we've seen a lot more cheesemakers come up.
Yeah, now I know you're available, your cheeses are available at the City Market in town, mm-hmm. as well as the Nelson Farmers Market. Are you involved in any other farmers markets?
No. In the past, we did D.C. I mean, distribution, oh my God, open that can of worms. But we made a decision in 2013 was when we entered a cheese in a contest, and it placed second in the category, and everybody wanted the cheeses, and we were shipping all over the place, and, you know, we were selling to grocery stores. And then it just we made a decision that we really had to figure out what kind of distribution we could successfully achieve. And so that meant two farmers markets. Nelson County, the people, that's an awesome market.
It is an awesome market.
And City Market in mm-hmm. Charlottesville, mm-hmm. which is a different kind of market, but no less awesome. And we sell to two local distributors who carry our things, Local Food Hub and Cavalier Produce,
mm-hmm.
Who I can't say enough about Amy Worrell. We wouldn't be Caramont without the good folks at Cavalier. They really stood by us.
Yeah, I know. When I was catering, most of my institutional stuff came from Cavalier. They were very accommodating.
And a lot of times people don't really understand that relationship between a wholesaler and a farmer is something that really might, you know, make or break you.
Absolutely.
I mean, just keep you in business. So we try to sell locally direct and give the people that come to the farmers market a little heads up on some of our artisan release or our small release cheeses. And then, you know, we let Amy and Food Hub sell, you know, put it on the truck and let them take it up too. So our distribution is, you know, hopefully now is smarter, not harder. And more sustainable, because you know, you really need to think about that when every time you hop into the car these days.
At the City Markets, you're dealing directly with the customers,
mm-hmm.
the people, and so you don't lose that connection. And then with the Local Food Hub, they deal with institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
yeah, that you got it covered. That's really neat.
Well, you know, in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you do what you have to do to
right.
get your brand out there and to get that, you know, get that one wheel of cheese 3.5 hours away. But, you know, we've done that, and hopefully this scenario is working and allows the people that really want our cheeses to get them. I love the farmers market because I love seeing my customers. I love being a part of the community. I never tire of a kid having, you know, goat cheese for the first time and liking it, and his parents looking at him and going, oh my God, he likes it, you know. I never tire of that. I never tire of little old ladies from Croatia coming and saying it tastes like the cheese they had, you know, in their country. And you won't get that if you just sell to a distributor.
True.
So the farmers market is just as much, and the events we do, they're just as much for me as it is for us. There's that relationship that local food has to have.
Yeah, it's all about community. Absolutely. It is about community. We're going to take a little break here. You're listening to Your Health. WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we have been listening to Gail Hobbs Page of Caramond Farm. And we shall be back shortly. And we are back. This is MC Blair. To Your Health, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We are listening to Gail Hobbs Page of Caramond Farm and the interview I had with her. And without further ado, we had just finished saying it's all about community.
You know,
it's more than just a piece of cheese.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, or a piece of meat or a vegetable.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you were telling me earlier that some of the people right here around where you are in Esmont, you guys are talking about kind of getting your own little food justice going on with everybody chipping in the community and growing for
the community. Well, I think we were talking about health benefits of raising your own food.
Yes.
And I love, you know, trading with my fellow farmers at the farmers market. But, you know, let's face it, you know, 2016 was kind of a tough year for some of us. And I started gardening and raising food and canning food and preserving food as a way to sort of deal with what was going on with current events in America. And we have the land here. What started as just, you know, like a few herbs has turned into three raised beds. And now we're putting up a high tunnel so that we can raise more food and just so that we can sustain. Our employees love it. You know, we share with our employees our vegetables. We raise an animal for them, you know, pig, so that they can just have goats. You know, they can have an added perk of working on a farm. And now our neighbors are starting. My neighbors over at Mount Alto Sungrown are going to be helping us. So, yeah, I mean, what really started out is like a way for me to sort of like meditate out and get away from, you know, what was going on in the world. Let's face it, you know, I'm not ashamed to say it.
Right.
It has turned into something that is, you know, for lack of a better pun, growing.
So, Gail, let's talk about your business and the customers that you deal with. You kind of cultivate them, right? As almost like a garden?
Exactly. I mean, it's an analogy that I have used with my employees and in meetings many times. And, you know, it's one thing to get an account, and it's another thing to keep it. When you are figuring out who you want to sell to, how you want to sell, do you want to do all retail? You have to really have that relationship with your customer, which is easy at the farmer's market. In, you know, there's a certain amount of greenwashing or local washing that goes on, and I've always taken a lot of pride in my customers because a lot of times they will spot it and text me or email me and say, hey, look, I know that's not your cheese. It says it is, but it's not because I know how your cheese tastes.
Mm.
And so that is one of the challenges of being in local food and watching the local food movement become very popular and almost like a marketing tool. And, you know, where you go and somebody, especially some of the larger concepts, some of the larger local food concept, you know, restaurants, and they'll buy it once or twice, or they'll buy, you know, 10 pounds of something, and then 2 years later you're on the menu. And you're like, wow, that 10 pounds lasted a long time. You know, farmers, we're a humble bunch, and so you don't want to rock the boat, and you don't want to cause a confrontation, excuse me, and so you kind of shy away from that. But it's a tough decision but what's really important is that you identify it early, if young farmers out there, young cheesemakers, and that you realize that, like, that's not cool.
No.
That's not support. And a lot of times what they will say is, well, I thought you needed the, you know, it's a win-win for you because, you know, people think you're on the menu. I was like, but I'm not on the menu, so what part of this is good for me?
Exactly. So they buy a little bit today, and then a year from now, it still says, we feature a Caramont Cheeses, and there's no Caramont Cheeses.
Yeah. It's a very tough call, and because essentially what they're doing is, you know, they're riding piggyback on
your
market.
Trading on your on your name and not being a customer.
And, you know, particularly as a female farmer, you know, we're inclined to be accommodating and maybe a little more reticent to have a confrontation. But I would encourage people doing this. That those are the very things that that set you back down the road. And it's better to just get it out on the table in an unemotional way. Hey, I don't want you to do that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You're listening to Your Health on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice, the voice of resistance, right here in Charlottesville. And we are talking to Gail Hobbs Page of Caramont Farm. I'm MC Blair, and it's a beautiful day, Gail. Gorgeous.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better than this. I'm a little worried. We haven't had here we are in November, and the mulberry tree still has its leaves.
Gail, I want to thank you, by the way. Folks, Gail is the one who turned me on to real food back in like 2002, I think. And she gave me a warning. She said, before I tell you this, you have to know that if you do this, you cannot go back. That your body will reject the factory farmed food. And she was right. But I just wanted to thank you, Gail.
Oh, that's so sweet. I have no recollection of that, but it sounds like something I would say.
Yeah, it actually and started me on the right road. That's absolutely for sure. So
it's really kind of an old-timey concept. I mean, if you grow up with good food and, you know, you sort of get used to it, the idea that something is that you cook is really flavorful. And I think one of the things that led me to the style of food that I enjoy is that it just tasted good.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you, it seems like, you know, if you go to a chain restaurant or fast food, it just, it's kind of the idea of what it's supposed to taste like, and it always disappoints. So I guess that's kind of the warning that I was giving you.
Yeah, you know, in the United States for a long time up until, well, probably World War II, I think, possibly a little after that, maybe late 50s, the whole country was a farming community, you know, and then it changed.
The way our food was grown and distributed, I think it had a lot to do with interstates and fossil fuel.
I do, yep, absolutely.
And, you know, women back into the workforce where, you know, there wasn't the traditional model anymore, and it was all about convenience, and it gave, you know, larger food systems an opportunity to capitalize on that demographic. I mean, I think this stuff started a long time ago. I always enjoy Eric Schlosser's book, Fast Food Nation.
That was
an eye opener for me on many levels. Not just on the way our food is grown, but also the labor systems that it supports. And that book came out a long time ago. And, you know, even as we sit here right now, Mike, there are things in operating to ensure that bigger, better, faster, cheaper model of food is alive and well and supported by the people who are leaders. It is not a coincidence that we have the systems that we have. It's a very deliberate system.
It is, and
it all works together, and it dovetails together very nicely. You know, big pharma loves it.
Well, they do, because the factory food system keeps us sick. And then Big Pharma sells us pills. So,
we had a cheese making class here last Sunday, and a couple of the people here were scientists, and They had just gotten back from a trip to out west to an organic, grass-fed, 5,000-head cattle operation. And I was like, well, you know, how was it? Why are we talking about this? And he said, there was no grass. He said it was a feedlot operation, and they fed them organic grass pellets. So, but yet, and they could still market this meat as organic grass-fed meat. So here you go, people. This is what we're talking about. These systems are essentially still the same old thing. It's just a new spin. And that is big ag at its very worst, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
And so now, so he was there to treat, to analyze some kind of water system. So now these feedlots, these grass-fed feedlots, with no grass, I might add, 5,000 head. The first thing that comes to me is groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you, you know, there's a horrifying recall almost every single week in the United States of America, and it's listeria or salmonella, and it's on lettuce, or it's on cantaloupes, or it's in frozen vegetables. So, you know, where 25 years ago, you know, it was a recall and we could cook it away or we could wash it away. Hey, guess what? You can't do that anymore. It's in your food. It's in it. It's not on it. It was a really good conversation that we had, because these are the things that, you know, fast forward, you know, 25 years, and these are the problems that Big Ag, just one of the problems, I think, that Big Ag is that we're dealing with right now. It's, you know, the romaine recall, it basically, like, they told us, like, just not to buy it anymore.
Yeah, I remember.
Which goes back to, like, well, why are we setting up community gardens? Because I really still want a Caesar salad.
Sure.
And I don't want to be afraid to buy it at, you know, at a grocery store. One of the things that we cling to in the United States, I think, is food safety. It's their mantra. But what is safe about, you know, poop getting into a water system that, you know, that irrigates our vegetables? There's not much safe about that. And this is where we are now.
Yeah, I go up to Wolf Creek up in Madison and John Whiteside. And he's got quite a few head. He's got 600 or 700 head. But they all get the fresh pasture every single day. They rotational grazing.
So if it says grass-fed, then why is it not grass-fed?
Yes.
Because there are loopholes in our labeling that allow us to do things like that. Like a very little known fact in the dairy industry. There are all sorts of classes of antibiotics. So, you know, we all know that antibiotics shouldn't be in our food because it causes resistance. But there's a difference between an antibiotic that is administered versus an antibiotic that is fed.
Yes, and there are 12 antibiotics that are approved for animals.
Correct. And so, you know, not everybody knows that. And like, not everybody wants to be, and that's not their issue, and I get it. But the more, and yet, when there's a recall, or when, you know, grandma's dying of some mysterious, you know, infection that it's antibiotic resistant, this is why.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, folks, that's so true. So true. And so, you know, a person can get those antibiotics in their food, and then when they need an antibiotic, they may be resistant to it. So they have to keep going until they find one. It can really be bad. So that's why antibiotics in the food, not a good thing. Hey, we're back. This is MC Blair, and I am playing an interview with Gail Hobbs Page of Caramont Farm, and we're going to get right back to it. We left after talking about antibiotics and how we get antibiotics in the food, in the factory farmed food system, and those are used to add weight to the animal, as well as keeping them from getting sick due to inhumane conditions of the factory farm.
It is. And folks, if you eat meat from the, you know, from the factory food system, you're going to get some antibiotics. And if you get into a situation that Gail just talked about, they don't know, and they'll give you the standard antibiotic, and you're resistant to it, and it's certainly possible that by the time they find the one that actually would have worked, it could be too late.
And so here is the dilemma, I think, is because not everybody can go to Wolf Creek and pay, you know, $40 for a tenderloin.
Right.
Because, you know, some people see this as an elitist thing. And I don't know what the answer is to that, quite frankly, because the way the system is right now, it's expensive to get food on a small...
It is. Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. I invite your listeners to think about how we can make local food less expensive. You know, I don't know the answer.
Actually, John told me his idea of the answer, but the entire community has to buy into it. And that's the thing. In other words, if you have people, it would be a sliding scale. People with means would pay N dollars, mm-hmm. and people that are not so fortunate mm-hmm. would pay what they would pay at a grocery store, and which is less than what the product is worth, but the people with means would end up supporting the ones that didn't have them. It would be a community effort.
Well,
and
I
in
think
that case, it would work.
I want to give a shout out to the local food hub, because their nonprofit part of this is really addressing this problem. They have a program called Pharmacy, Pharmacy, instead of Pharma, and where they buy our product, and they work with local doctors who, instead of prescribing, you know, medicine, they prescribe good food, and they help. But it takes it's a nonprofit. It takes the support of those it takes monetary support.
Absolutely.
And you know, it's one of the things that drives me crazy about, you know, this, what we're doing, is that, like, local food producers is, like, we can't make it. We need more support, you know, on a state and local and federal level to do this. But our food is not, we don't get grants, we don't get public assistance, we don't get any help unless we're willing to go big.
Right, right. And that's the thing, folks, if, you know, the community itself, you know, you've got the, you know, Albemarle County and Charlottesville City, the politicians on the planning board and the city council, if they could buy into this whole, you know, the idea that it community based agriculture would in fact result in less copays, a healthier community, less diabetes, and, you know, better brains, which means better, you know, people learn and you know, in the education area. Now, I know City Schoolyard Gardens is doing a great job.
We are so blessed, because we do have a lot going on here and a lot of other places. You know, ironically, the food deserts are not around here. I mean, you know, we live in our food shed is very good, and, you know, there's, you know, where I'm from, northeastern North Carolina, not so much.
Right.
And you see a lot of obesity, you see a lot of, you know, heart disease, you see a lot of drug addiction, you see a lot of, you know, it's no coincidence. And, you know, working in your own little backyard is very important. The local food hub has done a great job. PB&J Fund.
Yeah, PB&J, yeah.
You know, Schoolyard Garden, can't say enough, you know, but, you know, these are the things that, you know, we need to wrap our heads around.
Absolutely. Like, UACC is doing a great job, Robert Morris. And he's mm-hmm. he's actually connected with City Schoolyard Gardens, and then he took over for Farmer Todd mm-hmm. at UACC. Mm-hmm. And what I find from that, Gail, is that the people that participate in that, it's a whole different
well,
outlook.
I'm gonna say something, probably the most controversial thing that I have said today. I think the University of Virginia has a great opportunity.
They do.
They own a lot of acreage here in southern Albemarle County, specifically Rebecca Deed's work at Morven Farm.
Mm-hmm.
They have so much acreage there that they could turn into something. And there's a bit of a quagmire there going on right now. I did an event with Rebecca there not too long ago, and we talked about this very issue. It's like, how can the University of Virginia, who was founded by Thomas Jefferson, who is perhaps the most famous farmer of all time,
absolutely,
how can we somehow spin that into, or combine that into, something that could really be a realistic, non-elitist outreach for community agriculture? I issue that challenge to the powers that be at the University of Virginia, because when I see land like that, I see potential.
Yeah.
And it breaks my heart to see it bush hogged, or farmer's term for a big tractor with a lawnmower.
Right, exactly.
Which is essentially about fossil fuel. And it's not good for, it's not good for the pastures, and there's just so much potential here in southern Albemarle County. We still have great big farms. And that's the challenge I issue to, people who own those great big farms, is how can you turn some of that land, regenerate it, and use it to feed people in our local food shed that ordinarily might not be able to afford something?
I'm with you on that. I've been saying that on the show for quite some time. So, Gail, you talked about the land that UVA has, the resources that they have, as well as some of the organizations within the Food Justice Network, the mm-hmm. 16 organizations within mm-hmm. PB&J, BAMA organization, mm-hmm. all that. If they could, make a joint concerted effort, do you mm-hmm. think that would go a long way? To food security for the area?
The word I have there is if. It's a big idea.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a lot of money, and it's going to take a lot of people. And, to put it together, this is, it's easy to come up with the big ideas. What's hard is to see them come true, and see them, and also, too, I was thinking about this when we were talking. Local food has been my issue for so many years, but, there's a lot of stuff, that a lot that has come, climate change, we have gun violence, we have just oodles of problems. And I think that sometimes people, the tendency is that, this drops by the wayside, or this isn't as important as it used to be. And I get that, but, we all... have to, I think, work in our own, on our own issues in a steadfast way, so mm-hmm. that we don't get drowned out by everything, that some of us can figure out the things that we need to work on and stick with them. Let moms demand gun sense or whatever that is. Let them work on that.
But, sure.
Let the people who have an interest in food justice, let's all work together and work on that and not get discombobulated by the chaos.
Understand. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier that some of these young folks that say they grew up in an environment like City Schoolyard Gardens and they learned about, or out in California, Alice Waters' Edible Schoolyards. And that's going on around the country in various pockets. And these kids are learning, and they're demanding, more local. And so you've got these, colleges in the area as well as UVA that have the big industrial food service companies, doing all their food. And the kids are actually saying, well, we want more local.
Well, I've seen it. We've had, since 2007, we've had many interns from various universities, young student farmers, and particularly from, we had one from two, three from Middlebury College up in Middlebury, mm-hmm, Vermont. Mm-hmm. That's what they did there. They basically said, yeah, we don't really want this food. We want this. And, you know, the Yale, we had a kid from Yale who, like, they did the same thing. And I guess, you know, as these kids mature and become young adults, and, you know, I think the consciousness will change. I remain optimistic in that way. I mean, so many good kids that have come through here who are still making a difference today.
Yeah.
All over the country. That's just inevitable. I mean, I think, you know, not to get too political, but apparently the demographic of 18 to 29-year-old kids who came out to vote yesterday, mm-hmm, was up by 300%.
Yes, I know. And that's grassroots, folks. Mm-hmm. That's people knocking on doors.
Okay. That tells me that, like, that makes me smile.
Me
because
too.
Because these are the same kids who care a lot about the issues that we're talking about right now.
So I think the answer, we're doing it. I mean, with the education and, you know, with the city schoolyard gardens and the other educational programs, I know of one farm out there, Hammered Inn, Mitzi and Aaron, and her kids actually started educating, mm-hmm, the local school.
Well,
out there.
Bel Air Farm is a great example.
Yeah.
They do great stuff there.
Yeah.
Not only, you know, for their CSA customers, but also they work with IRC, and, you know, they've encouraged other, you know, independent cheesemakers are out there now. I mean, and it's a big, big farm that is working. And you know, when it first started out, there was, you know, it was just a lot of bush hogging.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there was a vision, and then there was a plan, and then the plan, you know, continues to change and grow, to help our community. We haven't done it.
We haven't done it yet.
We're working
on it. Exactly.
We're all works in progress.
Yeah, working towards a great goal. Food security, food justice. So what's the future of Caremont?
Well, you know, we're always reinventing ourselves, and, you know, we're in this for the long run. And, you know, we also live here. I'm sitting on my deck, you know.
Oh, I'm so happy. It's beautiful.
In my outdoor kitchen. And, you know, what we've realized, what our little place can do is make great cheeses. Because I'm not ready to give up my culinary love of food, we offer culinary workshops. We invite people to come here and cook with me out here in my outdoor kitchen. We have a wood oven where we do wood cookery as well. We do food festivals here. We've got one coming up November 17th, which we call our Farmerly Reunion. We've got Jen Naylor here, who's going to cook some of her Korean street food, who incidentally lives about less than a mile from me down there. And we will continue to do our cheesemaking classes, and then just icing on the cake is our Snuggle Sessions 2020.
I was just going to ask you about your Snuggle Sessions.
Well, you know, you try to be jaded about it, but I just can't.
That's goats, folks. This is all about goats.
It's a good thing when people come to your farm and they see a newborn animal and they connect to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had literally thousands of people to come out here during kidding season and brave the elements. And it's a really great thing for our farm. We've invited other local people now to come and be in our pop-ups. And so, you know, they become a part of the Caremont experience. Jay and Steph from Virginia Vinegar Works and Amanda from Grubby Girl. And we get artists and music. And we just, you know, what's next for us is that, you know, we are here and we are expanding the experience of our farm on different levels. Just being a part, a cog in the wheel, so to speak, of our local food shed in more than just cheese, but in a holistic approach to enjoying our local food shed.
That's it.
So that's what's next.
That's what's next, and that's I think will go a long way in this quest for, as I said, food security, food justice, at least for our area. I mean, that's all we can do.
One of my favorite quotes, I saw Alice Waters years ago in New York City, and she said, the revolution will be delicious.
Yes, yes. By the way, folks, if you haven't met Alice Waters, Gail reminds me so much of her. outspoken, just a little piece of dynamite, you know? You've got the fire. You've got the fire. There's no doubt about it. And we are better for it in this area.
Well, thank you. That's really sweet. Some people say I'm... have too much fire.
Never. Thank you, Gail. Really, really appreciate this.
Thank you, my friend.
All right.
Lovely to sit and chat for a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness gracious. What a treat. Gail Hobbs Page of Caremont Farm. And I just wanted to say a few things real quick. Imagine a life with 70% less copays. And or none at all for doctor's visits because of the newest trend of direct primary care and because we're healthier. Less copays because we're healthier. Very few incidences of hours lost due to sick days. A life with more energy and increased production at work leading to less stress and promotions or pay raises. That'd be a good thing. These rewards can be achieved by supporting programs like local farmers markets, eating at restaurants and food vendors who support local farmers, and supporting other programs within the Food Justice Network. You can start your journey to a healthier and rewarding life. That's all you need to do is getting to community-based agriculture, which, of course, brings us all together, nourishes us, and provides a common ground between folks from different cultures and backgrounds. It strengthens and gives voice to people who, before now, had none. And most importantly, provides the true healthy food we crave and need for our bodies. Thanks for listening. And I want to thank Gail Hobbs Page of Caremont Farm for her insight and activism towards making our community a healthier place to live. So remember, folks, supporting our local farmers by eating real food, wearing a smile, and keeping a positive attitude are keys to your health. Thanks for listening.